around it and underneath.
And no ghosts are real.
You've been talking about Sasquatches and Yeti.
Yellow, orange object straight ahead.
This is the Paranormal Report.
Welcome to the Paranormal Report. I'm Jim Harold, and he is...
Micah Hanks. Yes, Jim, it's one of those weeks in the paranormal where we've got a lot of news, and right off of the bat, there is a big story that I've just got to say, honestly, I think I'm still a bit in shock in relation to the passing of a true icon in the field.
Oh, absolutely. Actually, this just broke maybe an hour before we started recording here. Leonard Nimoy of Star Trek fame and so many other things he did is... now passed at the age of 83, complications from COPD. And we're really, really sorry to hear of this. Of course, he's a cultural icon with Star Trek, and that's how most people know him. But I think that Mike and I would agree, at least for people who are interested in this particular field, an accomplishment that sometimes goes overlooked was his work with In Search Of. It is absolutely the program that got me interested in this. I understand it's the same for Micah. So let's... just take a little pause here and listen to the master at work.
Headlines stated that the expedition had sighted footprints of some enormous two-footed creature.
You know, his voice is so iconic, Jim, in the sense that, and it's funny because I've just been doing some audio editing yesterday with some of the clips, from In Search Of. And I remember as a kid growing up, watching that show. In my opinion, I don't feel like there is a show, frankly, that has really rivaled In Search Of. Of course, it was cheesy, but I was describing it to a friend, and cheesy only by virtue of it being dated. But I think there's
right,
such a thing
70,
as I believe that there's such a thing as quality cheese. And my friend, in fact, had said, living in Wisconsin, she said, I'm quite familiar with quality cheese here. and I have to say that it's very true that, In Search Of, for the time, really was just such a good show. And I, in my opinion, it remains unparalleled because not only do we have Leonard Nimoy, who's been such an icon in the sci-fi field, but we also had a program that, unlike a lot of shows today, didn't overtly sensationalize. There was a dramatic element with In Search Of, but if you'll remember, often they would interview people who weren't necessarily famous
right.
contactees. For instance, there was a UFO abduction episode that featured Leo Sprinkle interviewing people. None of the people who were the quote-unquote abductees in that episode are people you would recognize. It brought a very real-world element to it, and one of the men sitting there during a session with Dr. Sprinkle was undergoing this regression of his experience. A fascinating side note, by the way that the aliens in that episode are described, in every instance they describe them as looking like me, like normal people, just like a human being. It's a very... very interesting and honest portrayal, I think, of a phenomena that so often these days, not just UFO abductions, but anything, any of the number of subjects they address, ghosts, monsters, all that stuff. There was such a real-world, honest component that, to me, was very unlike the kinds of stuff that we see these days, this sensationalized, just everything is just...
Yeah, it was basically saying these are the theories, and they even say it in the introduction, these may be something along these explanations do not necessarily explain the phenomenon that we will examine or something like that. Even in that, I thought was very classy, just saying, hey, we're putting it out there. It's for you to decide. And I think both of us do a lot of that and are inspired by that. And the thing that is really bizarre, I was sharing with Micah here before we got started, was at the beginning of the month, at my site, jimherold.com, I wanted to do something for the listeners to my shows. So I thought what I'd do is give away a box set of In Search Of, strangely enough. And this was in early February, and it goes on. And basically, to sign up people, all they need to do is to sign up to my email list, and they'll be entered into that contest, and there'll be one winner we draw in the first. But just coincidentally, we have this sad passing, so I just thought that was extremely ironic. And of course, I think any discussion of Leonard Nimoy would be incomplete, of course, without mentioning his work on Star Trek. And I would say this, if you look at some people maybe on that show, to them, it may have been a job. In other words, they would have been just as comfortable being in a Western or in a police show or something like that. But Nimoy made a connection to the mores and to the morals of that show. In fact, he wrote, to this day, I sense Vulcan speech patterns, Vulcan social attitudes, and even Vulcan patterns of logic and emotional suppression in my behavior. And this is according to the New York Times obituary that was just published today on February 27th. And he said, given the choice, if I had to be someone else, I would be Spock. So really, I think that he made a connection to the principles of the Star Trek show, which there were a lot of meanings in that show, getting along with people who were different. I believe that show featured the first interracial kiss ever. And just this idea that we need to expand our horizons, get along with different people in that particular program, or with people from other planets. But I think there were a lot of things that they could say in between the lines about our social situation here in the 1960s that they couldn't say directly, but they could say it indirectly. They did that, and Leonard Nimoy was a big part of that. And we thank him for everything he did, and he will be missed.
Oh, he certainly will be. Again, truly an icon in the field. And I guess in that spirit of exploration and, going one step beyond, whether it be in search of or to the final frontier, some may call it space, or in Mr. Nimoy's case, it may be the great ever after. But we're going to go ahead deep into, space first. And a little later, we're going to be talking a bit about some of the latest anomalies in actual deep space. But this one, of course, is taking a ufological angle. Looking at what's always interesting to me, true testimony from a police officer recalling a UFO incident. This was carried in the Twinsburg Bulletin, but this, again, may be one of those UFO cases that people will remember. The incident occurred in February of 1969, and the article, I'll just read from the beginning here. The curious case of one local UFO sighting began innocuously enough in the city of 7000 with TV interference at a Glenwood Drive home, and concluded abruptly with a bizarre visit to the Twinsburg Police Department from a United States Air Force Lieutenant Colonel and his mysterious diminutive sidekick, which had been one of the odd components of this story that had caused one of my Graylian Daily Newsies to send this along to me. The story had gone that apparently this was, and this, again, a report documented in Project Blue Book, although it says a recently released report. We all know that these reports have been available for a long time, but nonetheless, the point is that it is from within those reports. A woman, age 44, and her son, 19, were watching the news when the color contrast had gone out on their TV, and then they lost their entire signal. They walked outside. It was about dusk, and then they called the Twinsburg police to report what they described as seeing a oval-shaped object that had red and white lights around it, what World War II pilots might have dubbed a Foo Fighter or a UFO. But the funny thing about this case, of course, is that there had been, first of all, Sergeant Donald Prange, a former Twinsburg officer and Marine Corps veteran, who later, as indicated at the outset of this article, had served as the chief of police there in Twinsburg during the 1970s. He was actually the responding officer to the woman's call just shortly after 6:30. But there were more than 20 in total that came in relation to this odd description of this object seen in the sky, this strange oval-shaped or round object. And, again, back in the old days, you didn't hear that so much, these egg-shaped craft, these strange objects. There are a lot of them in the Blue Book reports. Well, interestingly, and I love this, it says that about a month after the sighting, Prange says that his department had been visited by a USAF Lieutenant Colonel believed to be Quintilio, who had been, at the time overseeing Project Blue Book, I should note, and a strange little man with him. It said they brought out a light colonel and another strange man with him to question us individually. The smaller man, perhaps 5 feet tall, was not like us. He had strange features, almost like a child who has aged rapidly. He wore a hat, gloves, and he never spoke to us, never shook our hands, just observed. I don't remember the colonel even ever saying thank you. When they left, we never heard from the Air Force again. Prange added that he never experienced anything like the February 1969 call again in his law enforcement career. And he says, finally, you ask me what it was? Well, it was a flying saucer.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, a lot of people who have commented on this story in the last couple of days have said that the strange little man that shows up was even weirder than the UFO people saw.
Yeah, that is bizarre. And the other thing that got me when I saw this, I'm like, Twinsburg? It is within driving distance of my home because I'm calling in from Northeast Ohio. So I thought I thought that was and that happened to be the year I was born as well because I'm old.
You're certainly not. You're not 5 feet tall, and you're not a person with diminutive childlike features yet having aged. So at least we can rule you out as being an MIB.
Right. That's right. I'm not the diminutive little man. But actually, we're going to talk to a big man in the UFO movement, and really a great guy. I couldn't be more excited to have a little time to visit. And with the new audio format, we'll do this kind of thing from time to time. Ryan Sprague, Micah, fresh from the International UFO Congress. He's going to give us a report. Ryan, welcome to the program today.
Thanks so much, Jim. Great to talk to you and Micah.
Yeah, well, always good to hear from you, Ron. And I know you were having a good time out there. In addition to doing some interviews, and of course, also there were some, not just some big hitters, but one guy that Jim and I had really been interested in, Bob Lazar was in attendance this year.
Yes. Oh, we had Bob Lazar again, guys. Like we all know the lore that behind this man, but after 25 years of presumably radio silence, he's come forward. He spoke to the public, and whew, let me tell you, that was an exciting experience for sure.
I can't tell you how many times, Jim, but we've talked about that. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, with Lazar, a lot of people think that they're very suspicious of his story. Mm-hmm. And it's one thing to read on the internet a story and read it in books and those kind of things. But having seen the man and heard his story, what are your impressions?
Very good point. I've been really up in the air about Lazar ever since, sort of the news came out. I mean, I wasn't alive then, but it's very, very interesting how after 25 years, his story has not changed at all. And after hearing him personally speak about this and able to, off the top of his head, be very, very specific about what he was bringing forth about Element 115 and exactly the location where he worked and the amount of employees at S4, which, again, we have to keep in mind, Lazar never worked at Area 51. This was a separate location near Papoose Lake that he claims to have worked at. And I'll tell you guys, after hearing him talk for over an hour with George Knapp doing a Q&A, I am a firm believer. I do believe Bob Lazar.
Now, the general scope of what Bob talks about, of course, is that he had been directly involved in the reverse engineering of what he believed were some sort of non-human technology, correct?
Yes, that's correct. This included what he claims as Element 115, which is basically a anti-gravity propulsion system. And he does claim that he worked on crashed saucers, back-engineered saucers. And yeah, very, very astounding.
Yeah, Jim, I don't know if you've seen this. One of the weirdest videos, though, online is a recent, fairly well within the last few years, a video that had been posted up that either Bob had put up himself or someone else had, where he was showing, I think of all things, like some sort of a fuel efficient, I think like a water driven car or something along those lines. I mean, Bob's obviously got a lot of fingers in a lot of different pies. We do know that he's got, for instance, a scientific equipment company that he orchestrates and operates online. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I know one ghost hunter who purchased a I think it was a Geiger counter from his website. So, because at that time, Bob Lazar had been the only wholesale distributor of this particular variety of Geiger counter in the United States. So, there's no question, in my opinion, about Lazar's knowledge. It's quite obvious that he has a serious technical knowledge and understanding of a lot of different things with a lot of different applications, ranging from electronics to, more advanced engineering and physics as well. And while there are people, for instance, Stanton Friedman, who'd said that it was probably very unlikely that Bob Lazar, based on his background, that what was available to researchers, and versus what he claimed his background had been in his education, some have said it was very unlikely that Lazar was the real deal. But again, I have to look at this guy and say, is it possible that someone's records could be wiped? And I'll say this too. even our president right now, there have been a lot of issues that people have had trying to gain access to records publicly about our current commander-in-chief. And I'm not trying to go down the rabbit hole with that. I'm just trying to say that, you know, when it is in the interest of national security, obviously certain files and documentation about a person's, you know, past can be more difficult to obtain than at other times. Could it be that Bob Lazar is indeed one of these individuals?
Hmm. You make a very good point, Micah. We did have a lot of contention there at the International UFO Congress. We had a panel discussion with a young gentleman named Jeremy Corbell, who's been following Bob Lazar for over a year, filming him for a documentary. And we also had Stanton Friedman on the panel. And whew, that thing got heated, I can tell you that much. But again, there has been a lot of contention with Lazar's supposed background. The only argument that this filmmaker, Jeremy Corbell, brings forward is, at the end of the day, whether or not Lazar's credentials have been, you know, mixed, matched, or completely wiped out, we need to look at the information he's bringing forward. And again, Lazar said to us all there, you know, packed, it was about maybe about 4,000 people there that day for him, just said, guys, I have absolutely no reason to fabricate this story. It happened. And again, I have to tell you guys, I believe the guy.
Yeah, it is a fascinating tale. And certainly being, you know, when it was first brought forth by George Knapp, a person I know that Mike and I both admire very much just for the way he conducts his business and the kind of reporter he is, I think it makes it all the more interesting. And I know there was a lot of interesting things going on there. Any of your other favorites that you could tell us a little bit about?
Of course, yeah. We probably one of my favorites, Jim, was a gentleman named Clifford Mahudi. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him. Mahudi is a member of the Zuni Pueblo tribe, Native American tribe, and his talk consisted mostly of he compared the ancient oral teachings of his tribe to modern scientific theories, mostly relative to UFOs and what many Native Americans consider the star people, and how we've evolved and sort of westernized the idea of UFOs and potential alien beings, or the occupants flying these craft. So that was very interesting talk by him. We had one of the members of the Allagash abductions here, which was very, very interesting. That was Chuck. We had Tom Reed from the famous Reed family abductions.
Mm-hmm.
We had Frank Kimbler, who's done a lot of work with Roswell artifacts. He's a Xenu archaeologist, forgive me. So that was very interesting. So those were probably my favorites of the day. And we had some bombshell information about the Rendlesham case brought forth by John Burroughs, who has been fighting for years to get information out about his credentials and his involvement in the Bentwaters case. And we got word that Burroughs has finally resolved his issue with the VA hospital. They've come forward in a press release saying that we will cover all the expenses from the health issues you had from this incident. And they even used the term UFO in their final press release. So, yeah, really interesting stuff.
Ryan, I noticed that, for instance, I actually was able to be privy to that press release just a few days ago via a contact in MUFON that I have. And something that was shown to me was the fact that John had said that as a direct result of whatever encounter he had there in Rendlesham Forest in 1980, subsequently I should note that there was a newspaper article at Yahoo News, I believe, that misdated the entire thing. They said it was 1983. Yahoo UK. I pointed that out. Nobody seems to have noticed the fact that they got the damned year wrong. But anyway, but Burroughs said that there had been an artery, I believe, that had been shredded, I think was the term he used, as a result of his contact with whatever he encountered in Rendlesham Forest that night. And I got to say, I mean, this is just an incredible allegation to be made. Now, you say that according to the statement from the VA, that he will not only be, as the press release indicated, treated and it will be, or rather it will be compensated, but also that they use the term UFO.
They did. They directly connected whatever happened to John Burroughs, his health, to this incident. And I got to tell you guys, you know, whether or not we have so much backbiting, you know, that has come about with the Bentwaters case, but this is a huge step forward. I have to admit that they officially connected these two in official press release.
Yeah, and that's basically a branch of the U.S. government saying, yeah, this happened. I mean, that in and of itself is very unique. Well, Ryan, I got to tell you, I thank you so much for taking, and we thank you so much for taking some of your valuable time to share with us. Tell folks about what's going on with you now. What are some of the projects that you're working on and things you'd like to have the folks know about?
Yeah, of course, Jim. I'd love to. I'm currently finishing up the manuscript for my first book. That's going to be through Richard Dolan Press, working with Rich Dolan, our mutual friend, the historian. That'll be coming out later this year. You can find out information about that. And I will be posting an official recap of the UFO Congress at my website, somewhereintheskies.com. So that's where you can find all my UFO work. And I'll tell you guys, this conference was huge, informational. Science Channel, ABC, NBC, Fox, everyone covered it this year in a very serious manner. So yeah, just be on the lookout for that at my website. And guys, thank you so much for having me.
Oh yeah, we should do it more often. And thank you, Ryan Sprague, for being our field correspondent here on the Paranormal Report.
Thank you, guys.
Well, it was great to catch up with Ryan and get the scoop on what happened last week. There was a really big story, Micah. In fact, this was going to be our lead story until the Leonard Nimoy news that came out today, unfortunate news. But this has the internet shook because there's something they're seeing in space. NASA is seeing space, and we don't know why. This is wild.
The particular image that I've seen, for instance, we know right now, of course, that NASA's Dawn spacecraft is closing in on its orbit with Ceres, the dwarf planet. And there's been so much news. As a matter of fact, I've got a series of RSS feeds that I set up just with NASA and space news so that I can see what's going on about this every day. And this is one every single day you're seeing. But the photograph that was released recently, Washington Post actually carried it. What we are looking at is we're seeing this dwarf planet. There's a large crater area, and within that crater, not one but two extreme, mm-hmm. I would even say vividly bright areas that, you know, at first I kept hearing about what they called a white spot, and I'm thinking I think we've even talked about it on this show, and I know I've talked about it on my others, albedo, which is essentially just the measurement of reflectivity of upturned soil on a planetary body. And when, you know, our sun, for instance, reflects against the moon, there are times where that reflective quality can be so bright that it can create what appears to be a flash of light. Some have described it as being a star-like appearance or a flash of light that can appear superimposed against the moon, which is really believed just to be reflection. Now, there could be any number of things that might cause it. I'm looking at this photo, though. It's really hard to say that this does not look like some sort of a light source on Ceres.
Yeah, it actually looks like a light. Now, folks, you probably, and we'll have a link in the show notes. This is a story from the Washington Post, and you can see the picture, but they've been all over the internet. You've probably seen it already, but scientists are saying that it might possibly be a reflection of ice. But to me, if there's ice, that means there was water, and if there was water, what about life? You know, I mean, I just think this is amazing and really shows just now with high-powered telescopes and those types of things, radio telescopes and so forth, and in these exploratory craft like the Dawn spacecraft, we are just now starting to scratch the surface of what's out there. And I think we're just starting to discover these little things that hint at more. And, you know, again, probably not, but maybe it's a beacon. Maybe there's an alien race from somewhere else who put this beacon somewhere they knew that we would see it. You know, who knows? But it just really makes you wonder. 29,000 miles away. 29,000 miles away. And now there are two spots. So they say.
Well, you know,
unexpected and a mystery.
One other possibility that some scientists have suggested is that apart from being ice or some sort of a reflection, whatever the source of the reflection may be, the other is that there could be something at the base of the, as a matter of fact, actually, the base of this crater has been described as a basin. And one theory is that there could be something volcanic in origin, which also might account for the apparent, you know, light or illumination that seems to be emanating from this crater on Ceres. So we'll keep our eyes peeled on that. You know, let's change gears a little. There's been a lot of space news, and I think that's only right. it with the passing of the icon Leonard Nimoy. But you know, one of the stories that we wanted to touch on this week has to do with a near-death experience, but this one's particularly interesting to me because A, it was a priest, and B, he comes back with some interesting perspectives on the afterlife. Jim, fill us in.
Yes, this is a story about 71-year-old cleric Father John Michael O'Neill. And he died for 48 minutes recently before medics were able to restart his heart. And he had a shocking revelation to share with us, and it does give you food for thought. He said that he has clear and vivid memories of what happened to him while he was dead. He says he describes a strange out-of-body experience. He had an intense feeling of unconditional love and acceptance, as well as being surrounded by an overwhelming light. Now, right to this point, pretty standard for what we hear from a lot of near-death experiences. Mm-hmm. Then he said he claimed that at this point, he went to heaven and encountered God, which he describes as a feminine mother-like being of life, light, saying that her presence was both overwhelming and comforting. So in other words, he's basically saying God is a woman. And I mean, you've got to think about, you know, the Catholic faith. It's pretty staunch in the idea of a male God. So for a Catholic priest to come back and say that God is female, that's pretty noteworthy.
Oh, that is absolutely noteworthy. You know, we've seen a lot of changes. Especially with, of course, the Holy Church of Rome within the last couple of decades. Some of those have also incorporated the ideas about alien life and the like. And, you know, currently it's been an issue, I think, especially with discussion in relation to the Catholic Church. And, you know, Pope Francis taking, I think, what many perceive as a very liberalized kind of a view toward a lot of things, which many say is going to help move the church forward. Then there are, of course, also those prophecies that predict this will be the last pope and all this kind of strangeness.
Well, you know, he got some pushback, apparently. Apparently, the Archdiocese of Boston has not confirmed if they will allow Father O'Neill to resume preaching in his former parish in South Boston. But he says, I would like to share my new knowledge of the Mother, the Son, and the Holy Ghost with all Catholics and even all Christians. God is great and almighty, despite being a woman. So there might be a little loggerheads here, but a fascinating revelation from this man of the cloth.
I don't know, Jim, I still would just ask this, though, okay? You know, really, if we're talking about some sort of a disembodied consciousness, the question is, what constitutes being man or woman? Again, he describes it as being a motherly energy. I can get that, but I mean, you know, is it really right to say that God is a man or a woman? When, again the idea of man or woman generally has to do with, you know, gender as it relates to physical beings. So, I don't know. I wonder sometimes if indeed even the afterlife experiences or those near-death experiences where people perceive what they sometimes call everything from deceased loved ones to maybe disembodied non-human intelligences. And we hear about the same sort of thing in drug trips, frankly. I wonder sometimes if indeed even our perceptions as humans of those experiences can be anthropomorphized to an extent. I think it's pretty silly, though, to say that, you know, an individual... And whether or not that's indeed the case, I don't know, by the way, what the grounds are for whether he'll be brought back, you know, into a position as a parish priest. I don't know if that's health related. That's kind of what I was getting from what you were talking about, is it may have been health related. But if that is in relation to what he said, that he perceived that.
Yeah, the story did not make that clear. The implication was is perhaps because of what he said, but there was never stated directly it was because of what he said. So I really don't know the answer to it, but it is a mystery, and I guess we'll not know till that day. But speaking of mysteries, there's a mystery over the skies of Paris that involves a very real-world phenomenon, and that's that of drones, and it's getting stranger and stranger, Micah.
The drone situation has been something that has been on a lot of people's mind, especially as it relates to France. And I have to say that prior to this story right here being carried by the Wall Street Journal, there had already been a lot of interest in a series of drones that had been seen over landmarks in Paris. I think that before that, you may remember that there had been reports of drones over nuclear facilities in France just as well. And many people are referring to these things as mystery drones, what appear to be drones. I mean, again, you know, some sort of remotely controlled aircraft. And apparently the French police are saying that there is no link between drones that were flown by journalists recently, who actually were apparently arrested, and other drones seen in the city. Now, here's the latest. We know that there had been three Al Jazeera journalists who were detained by French police for flying a drone into city park. And apparently what they said that they were doing, these journalists, was that they were filming a report on the mystery drones,
mm-hmm.
some of those that had been seen around the western edge of Paris. Then they were detained because they had been flying a drone while filming this segment about mystery drones, if that's not confusing enough.
That's pretty meta.
Yeah, right. Now, one of these three journalists was a U.S. citizen who had been piloting the drone in question, and that individual is apparently going to be appearing in court, where he's likely to be fined a few hundred euros and have his drone confiscated. No, but this is the salient point, I think. Flying drones over urban areas, according to the Wall Street Journal, is banned in France, and violation can theoretically lead to convictions of up to 1 year in jail and fines of up to $51,300. But French courts have so far imposed smaller fines and no jail terms. The question, though, about these mystery drones, again, there have been a lot of them seen, and just prior to this arrest, in fact, two nights earlier, there had been a remote-controlled aircraft that had been seen over many city landmarks and also additionally some high-security buildings. And so I think a lot of people are getting concerned about, you know, what the origin of the drones are, and it's obvious why we'd be worried about this. What if in the case of, for instance, we saw what happened with Charlie Hebdo in France, what if in the case that there were people who were terrorists who were piloting drones and had nefarious intent? You know, especially when we see these things flying near Paris national landmarks, that is something that, of course, is going to arouse concern.
Yeah, this particular story says that there was actually a drone over the Élysée Palace of the French president. And think about that. We recently had that here in the United States with the drone that crashed on the White House lawn, I believe it was. So the thing is that drones, I think we would both agree that drones are cool, but they open up an incredible can of worms from legitimate security postures. You know, the thing is that there's so many things that people like the Secret Service and, of course, foreign counterparts to that organization for different governments have to deal with. And now you have a whole new level of something that they have to take a look at. And when you have things like ISIS and other folks out there who mean to do harm to the West and to our cultural and political institutions and economic institutions, it just it gets to be a very, very scary thing as these drones become more sophisticated and increase their capabilities. I think it's just going to be a security nightmare. And that doesn't even bring into the paranormal side of it where, you know, now we're confronted with, you know, a multiple of 10 times supposed UFO videos that are just simply drones. But I think that's even secondary to the security concerns that these drones do cause. And it's something that all of these security agencies, whether they be local law enforcement, national law enforcement, security services for politicians and so forth, are going to have to deal with. It's just something else on the threat grid that they're really going to have to worry about.
Absolutely. And again, you know, people may say, oh, come on, drones don't have anything to do with UFOs. There are a number of ways where they really do. Remembering, again, that UFO, meaning unidentified flying object and not, you know, space right. brothers and visitors. You know, I talked about it in Ghost Rockets, and then there's a longer history of objects seen hovering over nuclear sites. And earlier, as a matter of fact, I think it stems back to late last year. One of the big stories in relation to French drones was that there were believed to be or described as drones hovering over nuclear sites. And going all the way back to the 1950s, there is a long history, Robert Hastings documented in his book UFOs and Nukes, of unidentified aircraft hovering over nuclear yep. sites, which are obvious.
Robert Salas, yep.
Yeah, Robert Salas has talked about it. A lot of folks have made the issue and made the case that, you know, there are a variety of unexplained aerial phenomena that are seen over sensitive military sites and other landmarks and the like. So we're seeing a lot of that in France right now. And with heightened terror alert levels that have been underway ever since January, you know, of course, this is going to get people's attention. I should say that it's not believed, however, that the current investigation of mystery drones is related to the anti-terror effort. That's what's been stated by French officials, but I couldn't really see any way that you couldn't look at the two, especially following the
of course.
Yeah. So you know.
Well, looking at mysteries, Micah is kind of our stock and trade, and that's what we've done this week, and had that nice spot with Ryan Sprague. But I guess we're drawing another edition of the Paranormal Report to a close.
Yeah, absolutely. It just flies by, doesn't it, sir?
It certainly does. But there's more to come because you've got the audio show, but now you have those great little videos that we're doing every week, do at least a couple of them every week. And there's a very easy way to get, never miss any of them. Because when we went away from doing a long form video podcast, people say, oh, I'm going to miss all the videos, but you don't have to. In fact, how would you like to get an email every time one comes out? Well, we have arranged for that to happen. All you have to do is go over to paranormalreport.tv. That's paranormalreport.tv. And subscribe to our YouTube channel. You're subscribed to our podcast. You're listening now. Do the same with our videos, and you'll get the best of both worlds. Audio when you're doing other things, so you can multitask, and video when you want to sit down and enjoy some paranormal images. What do you think, Micah?
Hey, it sounds good. And I got to say, you know, being able to get that fast blast, that email direct to you every day with the latest, it's one of the most useful ways to get the latest content, not only that, you know, Jim or I put out, but really anybody. Email newsletters are still in this information age the way to go. So it's a quicker, easier way to get access to what we're putting out for you. Be sure and check it out. But you know, granted, you also want to come over and check out the websites. I've got one, graylingreport.com, and also jimherald.com on his end of things, where you can find all this fine content just as well.
And then there's social media. We're both on Twitter and Facebook. We'll spend your whole day going to our various web properties. I'm Paranormal PDCST over at Twitter. Micah Hanks is Micah Hanks, I think, at Micah Hanks. I think that was a smarter choice. And then you can both find us on Facebook. And finally, we want to share some of your videos on those little mini videos that we're doing now at paranormalreport.tv. And if you want to be a part of that, go over to jimherald.com/TPR signup. That's jimherald.com/TPR signup. Micah, it's been a pleasure and really a lot of interesting stories this week.
Absolutely. On that somber note, with the passing of Leonard Nimoy, nonetheless, I think we're all looking out a little further into the cosmos for answers, as we do every week here on the Paranormal Report. Jim, it's my honor, privilege, and pleasure to be here with you. And until next time, I'll talk to you soon.
Live long and prosper.
It has several lights flashing all around it and underneath. And no ghosts are real.
You've been talking about Sasquatches and Yetis.
Yellow, orange objects straight ahead.
This is the Paranormal Report.